too. Lefe de Spantelli eased himself into the seat beside the vice-consul for the I-forget-it tendency, carefully hooking his wings over the seat back and smiling at the vice-consul, who regarded him with that particular kind of vacant look people tend to assume when they're communicating by neural lace. Lefid held up his hand. "Words, I'm afraid, Lelias," he said, "had my lace removed for the festival." "Very primitive," Vice-Consul Lelias said approvingly, nodding gravely and returning his attention to the race. They were sitting in a carousel suspended beneath a vast carbon tube structure sculpted in the image of a web tree. The thousands of viewing carousels dangled like fruit from the canopy and were multifariously connected by a secondary web of delicate swaying cable bridges. The view beneath and to either side was of a series of great steps of stone dotted with vegetation and moving figures. It was very like looking at an ancient amphitheatre which had been lifted from the horizontal to the vertical, and each of whose seat levels was able to rotate independently. The moving figures were Weissner-Mistretel combinations. The Weissners were the huge two-legged, flightless, and almost brainless birds doing the running, while their thinking was done by the Mistretel jockey each carried on its back. Mistretels were tiny and almost helpless but brainy simians, and the combination of one of them per Weissner was a naturally occurring one from a planet in the lower leaf spiral. Weissner-Mistretel races had been part of life on Tyr for millennia, and running them on a giant mandala 2 kilometers across, composed of steps or levels all rotating at different speeds, had been traditional for most of that time. The huge, slowly turning racecourse looked a little like Tyr itself, which took its name from its shape. Tyr was a stepped habitat. Its 9 levels all revolved at the same speed, but that meant that the outer tiers possessed greater apparent gravity than those nearer the center. The levels themselves were sectioned into compartments up to hundreds of kilometers long, and filled with atmospheres of different types and held at different temperatures, while a stunningly complicated and dazzlingly beautiful array of mirrors and mirror fields, situated within the staggered cone of the world's axis, provided amounts of sunlight precisely timed, attenuated, and, where necessary, altered in wavelength, to mimic the conditions on 100 different worlds for 100 different intelligent species. This environmental diversity, and the civilizational codependence it implied, and intermingling it encouraged, had been Tyr's raison d'etre, the very foundation of its purpose and fame, for the 7,000 years it had existed. Its original builders were perhaps unknown. They were believed to have sublimed shortly after building it, leaving behind a species, or model, depending on how you define these things, of biomechanical syndricates, which ran and maintained the place, were individually dull but collectively highly intelligent, took the shape of a small sphere covered with long articulated spines, were between 0.5 meters and 2 meters in size, and had seemed to have an intense suspicion of anything possessing less of a biological basis than they did themselves. Drones and other AIs were tolerated on Tyr, but very closely watched, followed everywhere, and their every communication and even thought monitored. Minds were immune to this sort of treatment, of course, but their avatars tended to attract a degree of intense physical observation which bordered on harassment, and so they rarely bothered entering the world itself, sticking to the outer docks, where they were made perfectly welcome and afforded every hospitality. Tyr, after all, was a statement, a treasure, a symbol. And, as such, any small discriminatory foibles it chose to display were considered perfectly tolerable. The Wisner Mistretel racetrack was one level up from the tier where the Homomden Mission was housed, and three levels down from Lefid's home circumference. "Lefid's," the vice-consul said. He was a rotund, massy male, of apparently indeterminate species, vaguely human in shape, but with a triangular head and an eye at each corner. His skin was bright red. The flowing robes he wore were a vivid but gradually shifting shade of blue. He turned his head slightly, so that two of his eyes regarded Lefid, while the third continued to watch the race. "Did I see you at the Homomden do last night? I can't remember." "Briefly," Lefid said. "I wait hello, but you are busy with the Ashpatsai delegate." Vice-Consul Elias wheezed with laughter. "Trying to hold the blighter down. It was having buoyancy problems inside its new suits. Automatics weren't really up to the job with the AI removed. Terrible thing when one of these gas giant floater beasties suffers from flatulence, you know." Lefid recalled that Lelias had rather looked as though he'd been wrestling with a bow rope for what appeared to be a small airship at the Homomden ambassador's party. "Not as terrible as it must be for the inhabitant of the suit, I guess."
"Ah, indeed," Lelias chuckled, nodding and wheezing. "May I order you some refreshments?"
"No, thank you."
"Good. I have given up emotor-keyed foods and drink for the duration of the festival, and would only be jealous."
He shook his head.
"I thought primitives were supposed to have more fun, but everything I could think of changing, the better to partake in the festival spirit, seems to make life less fun," he said,
then made a tutting noise at something on the racecourse. Lefid looked to see one of the Wisner Mistretel pairs failing to make a jump, then hitting the ramp just behind and falling down to another level. They picked themselves up and ran on, but they'd need to be very lucky to win now. Lelias shook his head and used the flat end of a stylo to smooth a number off the wood-bordered wax tablet he held in his broad red hand.
"You winning?" Lefid asked him.
Lelias shook his head and looked sad. Lefid smiled, then made a show of inspecting the racetrack and the contending Wisner Mistretel pairs.
"They don't look very festive to me," he said. "I expected something more."
"Well, festive," he concluded lamely.
"I believe the race authorities regard the festival with the same misanthropic dubiety as I," Lelias said. "The festival is, what, 2 days old?"
Lefid nodded.
"And already I'm tired of it," Lelias said, scratching behind one of his three ears with a wax tablet stylo. "I thought of taking a holiday while it was occurring, but I'm expected to be here, of course. A month of challenging, groundbreaking art and ruthlessly enforced fun."
Lelias shook his head heavily.
"What a prospect!"
Lefid put his chin in his cupped hand.
"You've never really been a natural for the unforgetted tendency, have you, Lelias?" "I joined, hoping it would make me more."
Lelias looked up contemplatively at the broad spread of the tree sculpture hanging above them.
"Cavort prone," he said, and nodded. "I wished to be more prone to cavorting, And so I joined the tendency, hoping that the natural hedonism of people like your good self would somehow infect my own more deliberate, phlegmatic soul. He sighed. I still live in hope.
Leffid laughed lightly, then looked slowly around.
You here alone, Lelias?
Lelias looked thoughtful.
My incomparably efficient clerical assistant number 3 visits the latrines, I believe, he wheezed. My wastrel son is probably trying to invent new ways of embarrassing me. My mate is half a galaxy away, very nearly enough, and my current darling stays at home indisposed. Or rather, disposed not to come to what she terms a boring bird and monkey race.
He nodded slowly.
I could reasonably be said to be alone, I suppose. Why do you ask?
Leffid sat a little closer, arms on the carousel's small table.
Saw something strange last night, he said. That young thing with the 4 arms, Lelias asked, at least one eye twinkling. I did wonder if any other of her anatomical features were also doubled up.
Your prurience flatters me, Leffid said. Ask her nicely, and she will probably furnish you with a copy of a recording, which proves both our relevant bits were quite singular.
Lelias chuckled and drank from a strawed flask. Not that, then. What?
Are we alone? Leffid asked quietly. Lelias stared blankly at him for a moment.
Yes, my lace is now turned off. There is nothing else I know of, watching or listening. What is this thing you saw?
I'll show you. Leffid took a napkin from the table's slot, and from a pocket in his shirt extracted the terminal he was using instead of the neural lace. He looked at the markings on the instrument as though trying to remember something, then shrugged and said,
Terminal, become a pen, please.
Leffid wrote on the napkin, producing a sequence of 7 pendant rhombi, each composed of 8 dots or tiny circles. When he'd finished, he turned the napkin towards Lelias, who looked carefully down at it, and then equally deliberately up at Leffid.
Very pretty, he wheezed. What is it?
Leffid smiled. He tapped the rightmost symbol.
First, it's an Elenge signal, because it's base 8 and arranged in that pattern. This first symbol is an emergency distress mark. The other 6 are probably, almost certainly by convention, a location. Really?
Lelias did not sound especially impressed.
And the location of this location?
About 73 years into the upper swirl from here.
Oh, Lelias said,
with a sort of rumbling noise that probably meant he was surprised.
Just 6 digits to define such a precise point.
Base 256. Easy, Leffid said, shrugging his wings.
But what's interesting is where I saw this signal.
Lelias said, momentarily distracted by something happening on the racetrack. He took another drink, then returned his attention to the other man.
It was on an Affronta light cruiser, Leffid said quietly, burned into its scar hull, very lightly, very shallowly, at an angle across the blades.
Blades? Lelias asked. Leffid waved one hand,
decoration, but it was there. If I hadn't been very close to the ship, in a yacht, as it was approaching Tyr, I'd never have seen it. And the intriguing possibility exists, of course, that the ship doesn't know it bears this message. Lyre stared at the napkin for a moment. He sat back. He said. "Mind if I turn on my lace?" "Not at all," Leffitt said. "I already know the ship's called the Furious Purpose, and it's back here unscheduled in Dock 807B. If it's a mechanical problem it's got, I can't imagine it's anything to do directly with the scarring. As for the location in the signal, it's about halfway between the stars, Cromfallet 1/2, and Esperi, slightly closer to Esperi. And there's nothing there. Nothing that anybody knows about, anyway." Leffitt tapped at the pocket terminal, and after some experimentation got the beam to brighten until it ignited the napkin he'd written on. He let it burn, and was about to sweep the ashes into the table's disposal slot, when Lelias, who was slumped back in the seat looking blank, reached out one red hand, and absently ground the ashes under his palm before scattering them to the breeze. They fell floating away from the carousel in an insubstantial cloud, towards the seats and private boxes stacked below.
"Some minor running gear problem," Lelias said. "The affronter ship."
He was silent a moment longer.
"The Allenge may have had a problem," he said, nodding slowly. "A clan fleet, 8 ships, left here 100 days ago to investigate the swirl."
"I remember," Leffitt said.
"There have been..."
Lelias paused. "Indications, barely even rumors, that not all has been right with them." "Well," Leffitt said, placing his palms flat on the table and making to rise from his seat, "it may be nothing, but I just thought I'd mention it."
"Kinds," Lelias wheezed, nodding. "Not sure what the tendency can do with it. Last ship we had coming here went sabbatical on us, ungrateful cur. But we might be able to trade it to the mainland."
"Yes, the dear old mainland," Leffitt said. It was the term the Arforgetted Tendency usually employed to refer to the culture proper. He smiled.
"Whatever."
He held his wings away from the seat back as he stood.
"Sure you won't stay," Lelias said, blinking. "We could have a betting competition. Bet you'd win."
"No thanks. This evening I'm playing host to a lady who needs 2 place settings at a time, and I have to go polish my cutlery and make sure my flight feathers are fettled for ruffling."
"Ah! Have armfuls of fun.
I suspect I shall."
"Oh, damn!"
Lelias said sadly, as a great shout went up from below and to most sides. The race was over. Lelias leant over and scratched out another couple of numbers on the wax tablet.
"Never mind," Leffitt said, patting the vice-consul on his ample shoulder as he headed for the swaying cable bridge that would take him back to the main trunk of the huge artificial tree.
"Yes," Lelias sighed, looking at the smudge of ash on his hand.
"I'm sure there'll be another race starting in a while."